Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guest. And, well, right now our guest is Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and always a pleasure to have him with us. Hi, Joel. How are you doing?
I'm just fine, Dr. Stan. It's nice to be with you again.
Well, why don't you bring us up to date on what's really going on in the world?
Well, you know, last week, Dr. Stan, we had a major issue in the World Affairs Brief, an update on the JFK assassination information. As we had talked about over the years, with time passing, people who had been threatened into silence come forward after time, and eventually we had the two, at least the major shooter from the headshot from the grassy knoll, come forth and make a full confession. And there are many people on the internet who listened to your show and requested a sample brief from our office on that issue, and that's still available if people want to email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. But this week there was another witness came forth anonymously to the explosives embedded in the World Trade Center. And we expect this to happen more and more, just as it happened in the JFK assassination. But apparently a New Jersey emergency medical technician contacted the producer of the Loose Change video, the 9/11 video expose, which has been seen by millions of people on the internet. And he's given an additional crucial testimony that proves the World Trade Center was pre-rigged with steel melting explosives. And the story was reported on PrisonPlanet.com, courtesy of Paul Watson. And he said, a New Jersey EMT has gone public on how emergency workers were told that day that building number 7 was going to be pulled, quote, pulled. And he also described a 20-second demolition countdown that was actually broadcast over the radio frequencies of the emergency technicians. So that means hundreds of people heard this countdown. There are hundreds of people who knew that Building 7 was going to be pulled by explosives. You don't give a countdown if you're telling people, as the debunkers have said, we're just getting everybody out of the building because we think it might go down at any time. Well, you don't have a countdown for something that you just think will accidentally go down. This was a countdown to a controlled demolition. Now, but that was one particular part of his witness statement. The other concerned the World Trade Center itself. He said that he witnessed multiple underground support columns of the World Trade Center. Now, those are the major 47 in total pillars that held up each of the World Trade Center towers. Massive pillars at the base. They're about 36 inches by 36, and they're about 4 inches thick of steel. And in a letter to the Loose Change producer, Dylan Avery, this individual, who would only identify himself by the name Mike of New Jersey, describes how he was repeatedly alerted to, or tried to alert numerous authorities to what he saw on 9/11, but was ignored or told to, quote, shut up on every occasion. Ultimately, he was fired for persisting in trying to get his story out through officials, fired for, quote, disorderly conduct, meaning refusing to abide by the leader's desires for him to be quiet.
Well, I think it's an amazing story, and I have no question at all that we've never been told the truth. I have no question at all that Building 7 was a controlled demolition, and the implications of that, you know, are frightening. It means that those 3,000 people that died, they were allowed to die intentionally and purposely, and their bodies, of course, there are many, the 1,100 of them, have never been found. And that means that the attack on Afghanistan was unjustified, the attack on Iraq was unjustified, and I fear the coming war with Iran will have caused from the same cause. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, Joel, pick the story up from there.
Well, we're describing the testimony of an emergency medical technician who was rescuing people in the basement of the World Trade Center. And here's what he described. He says, quote, there were explosions, there were flashes, there was molten metal running down the I-beams of the basement levels like lava flows. I've never seen anything like it. Yes, he says, planes did hit the buildings. Anybody who says otherwise is a moron. But the explosions, the rapid, symmetrical, sequential explosions, they happened. He explained that he and others were in the basement of one of the towers helping injured victims when he saw one of the huge steel and concrete support pillars with an 8-foot section blown out of the center of it. Looking around, Mike saw other support columns that were in the same condition, prompting rescue personnel to ask, quote, how could someone have rigged all these explosives? We stood outside listening to the explosions. Mike, he was eventually, with his other people, rescue people, were told to get out of the basement of the tower. He said that he heard explosions after they'd left. They were taking shelter in a bus waiting station, one after another. He said every minute or so, about 10 minutes before the first collapse, a 30-foot or so section of the courtyard exploded straight up into the air. Now, that, of course, indicates explosives in the basement area. And just before the collapses, a series of deep below-ground explosions, then numerous explosions in the buildings above floors. Then he ran. He said, we felt the same deep explosions before the second collapse of the other World Trade Center. This was not just planes, he said. The rescue worker concludes emphatically the buildings were rigged, and there's no question about it. So, to summarize, we now have, Dr. Stan, multiple witnesses to hearing the explosions. Almost every firefighter in the buildings heard explosions. Now, debunkers have said this can be explained away by collapsing portions of the building before the actual total building collapsed. That isn't true. There's a real difference between floors falling on floors or things toppling over than the sound of an explosion. But the key point is that he's the first witness who has been in the basement when he's seen molten metal. Now, this is actual firm proof that there was something going on in the damage to the building, the sabotaging of the columns, that cannot be explained by a fuel-fed fire or a debris-fed fire. Neither one of those types of fires, according to the official explanation, can exceed a temperature that will bring steel hardly to the red view, not to bright orange or yellow, which is molten flowing steel.
All right, well, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen. Well, Dr. Stan, and Joel has simply been talking about this new witness that's come forward. Now, unfortunately, he's only known as Mikey, who only sent a letter. We don't really know who he is at the present time. He's probably fearful of his life because, as those who've read my December letter will realize, that almost everybody who's come forward to talk about one or another aspect of this has been threatened in one way or another, and several of the military officers have had their military careers destroyed. But certainly Joel is telling about this fellow Mike, who claims that there were molten steel in the basement, there were explosions in the basement immediately before the buildings fell. But this certainly goes along with what William Rodriguez had said. Of course, he felt the explosion in the North Tower before the plane hit the building, and although the building remained standing after that, obviously, there was a massive explosion in the building before the plane hit. He testified, William Rodriguez testified before the 911 commission. He tells the whole story in our 4-tape set. Why did the buildings come down? And then, of course, his testimony was sealed. For 50 years, he was never allowed to testify in public, only in secret, and they sealed his testimony for 50 years. Now, why would you take testimony and then seal it for 50 years? And the obvious answer is, they don't dare let the American people know the truth. I'm sure you know William Rodriguez's testimony,
yes.
Joel.
He was one of the custodians of the right. building and testified to all the windows being blown out in the lobby and clothes blown off people and things, and of course, the official statement is the fuel came down the elevator shafts and caused these explosions. But had fuel explained those, had fuel been the cause of those explosions, you would have seen a tremendous billowing of black smoke within the lobby. We have videos of the firefighters coming into the lobby for the first time and noting right on the videotape, look, all the windows, there's not a single window in the lobby. They're all blown out. And you look as the camera's panning around, there's no smoke anywhere. There's no black residue on the ceiling. It's a totally encaptured ceiling. It would still have been hugely black with billowy clouds of smoke were this a fuel fire of the type that we see whenever diesel, kerosene, aviation jet fuel goes up in smoke. So Rodriguez is absolutely correct about there being other charges, and those charges apparently did go off before. But, of course, this is a dramatic testimony that we have that it was a coordinated demolition in Building 7. We've been able to analyze it from the video of how that building came down, that it had to be a coordinated demolition. But now we have someone testifying that he heard the countdown on the radios. That's amazing because it means there's still other witnesses out there who are keeping silent due to threats. Threats from officials in government to obstruct justice obviously constitute a conspiracy. These are conspiracy facts, therefore, not just theory.
Amen to that. Well, I think that that's rather exciting that at least we're having more information. I wish this gentleman, however, would come forward. I can understand why he'd be afraid to, especially if, as I see what's happened to the other people who have come forward.
Yes. Well, it's possible, you know, that he could still come even further forward if he, obviously, once this gets out widely spread, the powers that be are going to know who he was because he went before his supervisors many times and got fired for disorderly conduct. That's not too hard to trace. So it's in his best interest to come forth and give his name and make a full detailed announcement and tell names of who the supervisors were covering up. That's the kind of things that would really be helpful. Now, there's another dramatic revelation that came out this week as well, and it's the tape recorded interview of Aaron Russo, the documentary producer in Hollywood, who is not the typical pro-government Hollywood director. You know, we see television shows like 24 coming out, which is a mock-up of all of the justice. I mean, this whole series on television is built to condition people to accept that the war on terror requires putting people in concentration camps, it requires breaking the law for federal agents, it requires wiretapping, and it's all done in such a way that every one of these government agents appears justified to do these things. So, but he is not one of those. This is a person who, even before 9/11, produced the dramatic anti-government video, America, Freedom to Fascism, and talking about essentially where the Bush administration was taking us. Russo tells that a few years later, his normal friends in Hollywood began to try and dissuade him from taking this anti-government stand. And one of those friends was an attorney named Nicholas Rockefeller, yes, of the famous Rockefeller family. Now, he had been friends with Nick Rockefeller for several years before this. He ended up getting to dinner with him and thinking Russo was a typical Hollywood liberal that could easily be dissuaded, and having been friends before, Nick Rockefeller apparently opened up to Russo about a lot of the things the establishment had planned, including the terror attack on World Trade Center. Now, this was before it happened. Rockefeller was clearly trying, as Russo says, to recruit him to the other side. Rockefeller even knew that the powers that be in Washington would use the terror attack as a provocation to go into Afghanistan and Iraq, and he mentioned those two countries to them. He even joked with Russo about the public seeing on television soldiers looking around in caves for Osama bin Laden, but would never find him. Rockefeller said Russo was cynical. He was relatively unguarded in what he said to him. Now, all of this, I believe, is credible, even though it's usually falls into the category of something that's too good to be true. We have never had a high-level conspirator admit to their plans, but this comes the closest because Rockefeller didn't intend it to be a confession to the world. He said it privately. He said it when he was in an uncautious mood. Rockefeller is now probably regretting that he spilled the beans to Russo, but that's water under the bridge. Or perhaps it's also Russo's death warrant. If he ends up proclaiming this too loudly, they may try to shut it up. Though there's some safety in having it on a video now on the Internet. It can't go away now, and it won't help to shut him up. Rockefeller also talked about how they funded, through the Rockefeller Family Foundation, the feminist movement in order to break up the family, to get more women out in the workplace, to get more children into daycare, so as to help people look to the state as their family. He mentioned goals to depopulate the world, to get people to eventually accept embedded microchips in their bodies through compromising their security so that people would demand these things for safety reasons. But he also said something interesting. Rockefeller told him how the elite planned to have their chips encoded with a special code telling all police and anyone, should they be arrested, that they're part of a special group and have immunity from arrest, and that they could get released because when their chip was scanned, it would show that they were part of this special group. That's fascinating. You can see that video on Google, what used to be YouTube Video, now under Google.com, and just do a search for the Aaron Russo video, and you can see it online. It's a fascinating video.
Well, it certainly sounds very plausible. I've talked to Aaron a number of times personally. I think he's a very honest, a very courageous individual.
Our next and main story of this week's World Affairs Brief is the administration campaign to intimidate good Border Patrol agents. I keep getting more and more evidence that there is an overwhelming administration, a concerted campaign against Border Patrol agents who enforce immigration laws and who attempt to defend themselves when confronted with violent Mexican drug smugglers and illegal aliens. And the object, I believe, is to make all agents so paranoid about using force that no enforcement of the law will take place. Now, we're all familiar on this station, and I know you've talked about Ramos and Campion, the two Border Patrol agents that were sent to jail for 11 years for defending themselves against a drug smuggler, and how they were railroaded into prison. But this week, I had the chance to interview an investigator from the Department of Homeland Security, who I felt I could interview him because he expressed to me privately some very grave reservations and said there's widespread distrust of the Bush administration in Homeland Security among the people who were there before it became Homeland Security. And he volunteered to me that the morale in the Border Patrol is at rock bottom now. He says good agents feel they are in legal limbo, that they will be prosecuted for even the most minor violations of procedures on lethal force, while illegals who threaten them with bodily injury will be given immunity to testify against them. And that's been the case in the last two or three judgments against border agents. Many, he said, are just planning on getting out, of retiring early, leaving mostly yes men behind. He says, increasingly we'll only see thugs remaining in the employ of the federal law enforcement agencies. So it's no wonder that in a recent government study, employee satisfaction was the lowest in the Department of Homeland Security of all government agencies. The lowest employee satisfaction is in Homeland Security.
And Border Patrol, would that come under that?
That's correct.
Perfect. Okay.
That's right. Border Patrol, INS, and all of the enforcement agencies, DEA, all of that comes under Homeland Security now, under Michael Chertoff. So, as we're going to see with the following stories that I'll talk about in this interview, the intervention on behalf of the illegals and against Border Patrol agents comes from the supervisory level of the Border Patrol itself, and it is coordinated, it appears, with U.S. attorneys and prosecuting attorneys directing the manipulation of evidence and the prosecution of these agents. I covered in a previous brief the fact that the Bush administration has wholesale fired a whole bunch of U.S. attorneys and replace them with yes men. So this is what's happening. We have one particularly egregious agent down in the San Antonio area named Sutton, who is in charge of most of the stories that we'll talk about, the prosecution of the border agents in that area.
Well, apparently they made a number of statements, you know, to the congressional committees about how these agents had said they just wanted to go out to shoot a Mexican, and of course this whole thing, they were trying to cover up what they'd done because they knew they'd done the wrong things, and you know, there was no question, you know, that the guns that were fired from their bullets fired from their gun were responsible. And then suddenly we find out it's all a lie. I mean, they're lying about everything. Government agents lied to Congress, and of course, well, perhaps we can cover more of that when Joel gets back. But, of course, once you demoralize the Border Patrol, do you really think they're going to enforce the law? Well, Joel, pick the story up there.
The reason, Dr. Stan, that the Border Patrol agents try to sometimes cover up evidence is that they know that they have supervisors and prosecutors looking to prosecute them for any wrongdoing, so they're scared to death of admitting that they have to use legal force. In fact, the evidence, you know, didn't show that the bullet didn't come from the gun. It's just that the ballistic evidence failed to show that the bullet in question came from his gun, and it was used to prosecute him anyway. The point is, the agents admit they were the ones firing the guns at the people. They felt it was justified, however, because this person turned around with something, a shining object in his hand, and they thought it was a gun. And it could very well be because border agents are assaulted with deadly weapons over 100 times per year. And so this is a common occurrence. The military incursions, as I'll talk about, are also a common occurrence from Mexican forces in military uniforms, who are obviously given the go-ahead from the Mexican government to secure and accompany drug trafficking or drug importation across the border. Let me, first of all, before I talk about those two instances, talk about the latest case of an agent, Arizona agent, who shot an illegal who picked up a large rock and was getting ready to launch it at him. The incident happened 2 weeks ago when a 39-year-old border agent tried to arrest seven illegal aliens near Naco, Arizona. The agent had three immigrants inside a vehicle and three on the ground. One of the immigrants, illegals, named Francisco Rivera, age 22, refused to comply to get on the ground. Rivera instead picked up a rock, a big five-pounder, which is a very lethal weapon, and cocked his arm to throw it at him from about 10 feet away. So that's a very life-threatening situation. The agent said he killed Rivera with a single shot when he failed to respond to his commands to put the rock down. Now, rock throwing at agents in their vehicles is very, very common. It's so common that it's hardly even reported anymore. But the illegals obviously know that you've got a chance of getting away if you throw a ton of rocks. Everybody surrounding a vehicle is coming to arrest them, throw a ton of rocks, break the windows, try to get the agent to duck while you run away. And so this is not unknown. The local Border Patrol Union now claims that Hernandez was firing in self-defense out of fears that the agent, now that, of course, that he would be railroaded after Mexican officials were given unrestricted access to the witnesses before U.S. investigators. Now, let me just say that this investigator in Homeland Security that I talked to knew about this situation very well. He brought it up and said, and gave me some additional details that the news had not known. He said, in fact, that the woman supervisor, who is a Latino, and very much pro-immigration, as soon as these border patrol agent brought in all of the rest of the illegal aliens who were rounded up after he had shot the one illegal, put them in jail, they were all locked up, she immediately ran over to the phone and called the Mexican consulate and had them come over, and they came over and coached the witnesses. And this was done before the investigators of the Border Patrol had begun their interrogations. The Border Patrol investigative agents protested about the presence of the consulate agents and requested that they stay away and away from those witnesses until they've had a chance to interview them. And this supervisor overruled them and continued to allow these consulate people to brief these people. What they did is coach them on how to all uniformly deny to get their story straight so that it would hold up on court. This is an egregious violation of this poor patrolman's rights to allow someone to come in and coach.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joel was just saying that that there was a patrolman who shot an illegal immigrant who had come in along with half a dozen other people and had a five-pound rock he was going to throw at him, and his arm was cocked, and when he refused to put it down, the officer shot him. Well, the officer took the people in, and of course, but then the supervisor, who was Latino and was very much in pro-immigrant, actually had the consulate bring in all sorts of people to coach the people who had been arrested for coming into our country, so they would have their story straight, so that they could incriminate this, and they would lie together to incriminate this border patrolman now, who probably will be indicted for murder. And yet he was trying to protect himself. So pick the story up there, Joel.
Well, the the egregious thing is that the supervisor were working against the patrol agents, and they were obviously trying to elicit testimony from these two, prosecute them. This tells me, in combination with what happened to Ramos and Campion, as well as Hernandez, that the Border Patrol is out to make an example of any Border Patrol agents that use their weapons so that everyone is afraid to do so. And as this investigator for Homeland Security told me, says there's a fear factor now that's very, very strong. None of the Border Patrol can care anymore. They're not going to put their life on the line to protect American law when their own Border Patrol is undermining them. Now, this is also even worse with this example. A couple of years ago, this same investigator told me this week, he was involved in a case when Mexican military personnel had crossed over into the U.S. territory protecting a drug convoy. And when they sighted a Border Patrol agent, he immediately called for reinforcements before going over and trying to halt this this incursion. The agent was surrounded by the Mexicans with AK-47 assault rifles. These were all in military uniforms with American Humvees, which is what they use. America sells these to Mexico. They forced him to exit his vehicle and lay on the ground. So here's assault, deadly weapons pointed at his head. When other Border Patrol reinforcements arrived, the Mexican military turned around and fired shots at the approaching vehicle. So not only do we have threat to kill on the agent on the ground, we have actual deadly shots fired in the direction of the approaching Border Patrol vehicles. A firefight ensued. The Mexicans finally gave up and were taken into custody and jailed. This investigator that I talked to said he was present when a high-level supervisor in Border Patrol called up and ordered him to release the Mexicans and escort them back to the border and give them back all their weapons. Now, if that isn't a signal to the Border Patrol that our own government is in cahoots with Mexico, I mean, we have these incursions all the time. I might say these, that the U.S. government keeps covering for Mexico. And there are hundreds of documented attacks on the Border Patrol agents each year. And yet, for all of the Bush administration's threatening of other countries on the other side of the world for, quote, attacking our liberties, our government seems completely undisturbed by monthly and weekly incursions in the United States of Mexican soldiers using the weapons against our people and refusing to allow our National Guard or Border Patrol or police to shoot back at them and covering for them.
Well, I think what they're doing, they have an organized program to demoralize the men who are guarding our border because the administration has no loyalty to America. They want to do away with our border. They want to unite us with Mexico and raise our living standards to that of the Mexican and the same freedoms they have. Joel, could you clarify the bullet that was recovered from the drug smuggler involved with the two Border Patrol agents? What was the story of the bullet? Because there was some question about the validity of the bullet, or at least what the government was saying. What was the story there?
Well, the question is that the pro-Ramos campus, well, the straight story is that the government ballistic determination said that they could not determine with any degree of accuracy that the bullet came from Ramos or Campion's gun. So in other words, the bullet could not be used as testimony against them, and yet it was anyway, and the government suppressed that information from the expert. Now that's what's come out, they suppressed the information. So what it does, it shows the government was in collusion to try to railroad them in jail. Ramos and Campion had admitted that they shot at him, so it really wasn't contested. They weren't contesting that it wasn't their bullet. It's just that the government suppressed something that the defense could have used, that the bullet could not be traced to either of their guns.
Well, how do they know he wasn't shot after he got back in Mexico, do they?
Well, the point is, though, that they shot at him.
They shot at him, right.
Agreed that they shot at him, and that's what they were prosecuted for, whether they hit him or not.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Joel Skousen. America is under attack. But the attack is really coming from our nation's capital. And people within our capital have no interest at all in defending your freedom or preserving our sovereignty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Joel Skousen. And Joel, pick the story up from there.
We're talking about military incursions from Mexico into the United States and how the U.S. government is complicit in covering up for these incursions, never prosecutes, and lets these people go. According to Kevin Mooney of CNS News, more than 200 incursions by the Mexican military of the U.S. southern border have been documented since the late 1990s. 200. Representative Ted Pope, Republican of Texas, whose district is in this area, said in an interview, "Our federal government denied it occurred, this military incursions that he was talking about, until Texas sheriffs took photos and presented them to the government." In other words, they were in complete denial, refused to accept the evidence until they started photographing, and then they couldn't deny it anymore. He said, "There is no nation in the world that would allow this invasion to occur except for the United States." And that was my point before. The United States goes around threatening nuclear annihilation for anyone who ever threatens us, and yet Mexico is literally invading and shooting at our police, and we don't do anything about it. So it's only a very selective prosecution of our liberties that the government is talking about. And it seems that only the good guys are being prosecuted. U.S. Attorney John Sutton, who oversees the federal prosecutions in the West and South Texas from his office in San Antonio, has been deeply involved in several of these cover-ups. He's deeply involved in the prosecution of Ramos and Campion. He's deeply involved in the prosecution of Hernandez and the rock-throwing incidents. And he's very deeply involved in the cover-up concerning the House of Death mass murder case. Juanita Fielden, at least, the assistant U.S. attorney in El Paso, who's prosecuting the case, works directly under his supervision. The fact that Sutton goes on television as the point man for the administration in defending the prosecutors in the Ramos case indicates that he's very much involved in firsthand supervision of these cases. What's so significant about the House of Death case is that it is aptly named because several good guy drug informers have been lured into the House of Death and been killed there. And then it came out that the House of Death was run with several U.S. agents who were part of the House of Death. In other words, they were complicit in the killing of the good drug informants who were blowing the whistle on drug importation. Now, if this sounds like U.S. agencies working against themselves, you would be wrong. In fact, what this case illuminates is that the U.S. is part of the big drug rings that import drugs into the United States to finance secret U.S. operations. This has been known to be doing this by the CIA for ever since the Vietnam War. Actually, it goes clear back even further than that, but it really got very robust during the Vietnam War.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Joel. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joel Skousen. And before we proceed with Joel's discussion of CIA and government involvement in the drug smuggling, and, of course, going after the people who are trying to stop it. But let's tell our listeners a little bit about the World Affairs Brief and how people can get a copy of it. Would you like to give a little details and the website and how to contact you by email?
Thank you, Dr. Stan. The World Affairs Brief is my weekly news analysis service by subscription. There's a modest subscription price for the weekly briefing. I cover in detail all the major stories that affect the United States, especially relative to insider information that the major establishment media will not be telling you. It's through omission that they distort the news primarily, and I try to put back that information into my briefings for the American people. It's showcased on my website, www.worldaffairsbrief.com. And you can go there and get a listing and a readout of links to all the major news stories during the day, as well as lots of free information on the site about my analysis and reports on government cover-up in the past, everything from the JFK assassination to the 9/11 controversy, Oklahoma City bombing, and much, much more. If people would like a free sample copy of the World Affairs Brief, then they can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief. That's editor@worldaffairsbrief.com, and I'll be happy to send them a sample issue. The current sample issue right now is my special JFK update that I talked about at the beginning of the program, how it still affects us today, because the same people who engineered his death weren't simply going to kill Kennedy. It was part of a large globalist conspiracy that we're still dealing with today, with the attack in Iraq, Afghanistan, and coming up in Iran. This tomorrow's brief will be on what we're talking about today. So if people want a free sample issue, it's editor@worldaffairsbrief.com.
And let me recommend it to you. I read all of the articles on World Affairs Brief every day, and of course many of them we pull down and put into our files. All right. Well, you were talking about this House of Death. Could you explain to our listeners just a little bit about what the House of Death was before we go on? Because some people may not be aware of this.
The House of Death was a Mexican drug just across the border from El Paso, a drug house that where drug cartel people would lure in agents and others and kill them. Whether it's good DEA agents or other people, several U.S. people have been killed, including friendly drug informants who are blowing the whistle on drug operations. Well, in the prosecution of the case about the various deaths that have occurred there, and there were one large massacre a few months ago, last year.
But are we talking about 10 people killed there, 20 people, how many?
It was over 10.
And of course, there weren't a lot of them buried there in the yard?
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. And it didn't happen all at once, but there were several at a time. And the investigation came out that several U.S. paid informants were working in that house of death and had knowledge of it and could have stopped those deaths and didn't.
And of course, that's just like it was with the IRA, where the chief torturer and murderer for the IRA, the number two man of the IRA, was a British agent. And he was killing people who were accused of being British agents. He was an agent provocateur. And the British really controlled the entire IRA operation. And it took many years before that eventually came out.
And the similarities are dramatic here, Dr. Stan. As I was just saying, it sounds like U.S. agencies were working against themselves. But if you assume that, you're wrong. And it was also wrong that the British were working against the IRA. The IRA was acting as provocateurs in terrorism so that they could justify taking away liberties in Ireland and in the British populace. And in the same sense, the U.S. government has been running drugs for many years, and especially through pipelines in Mexico. They control whole cartels. But the DEA, of course, does prosecutions and killing of drug lords, but they're only the drug lords that keep surfacing to compete with U.S.-run drug operations. And so informants who won't stop blowing the whistle on U.S. operations in tandem with the Mexican government sometimes have to be eliminated, and that's what was happening in the House of Death. And so what we have is certain agents eliminating other agents who are working on the white side, who don't understand that the U.S. government is actually running most of the drugs into Mexico. And that's why we have the U.S. looking the other way about Mexican military incursions. It is not simply, as the U.S. keeps saying, we have to have friendly dealings with Mexico. We can't make an issue. That's what they tell the Border Patrol agents when they tell them they're letting these people go. But the real reason is the Mexican government is complicit in this. The U.S. government is complicit in these drug operations. The Mexican military is there with full knowledge of the U.S. government, and that's why they're covering up for this.
Well, certainly this would be the dark side of the government that you so often refer to. There's some very good people who work in government. I'd say the majority are good people trying to do a good job. However, at the upper echelons of our various investigative agencies are people from the dark side, evil and wicked people who have an entirely different agenda.
Well, and Sutton has also been involved now, deeply involved in the prosecution of Ramos and Campion. And Ramos was just beaten up this week in prison.
You would think that, here's a police officer. Ordinarily, you put them in a minimum security prison where they'd be safe. Instead, they put them into a medium security prison, put them out in the yard so that he can be killed or beaten senseless, which is what happened to him.
But he was beaten in his cell, and I was talking to this investigator from Homeland.
It was not then out in the yard, as we've been told.
That's correct.
Now, who beat him?
Well, and there were three or four Hispanics who beat him, and...
How did they get into his cell?
Well, it was an open area of the cell. The doors were open at this particular time.
All right.
And where you can walk down the hallways and things. But these things are
how to be orchestrated by the authorities.
Well, they're surveilled by cameras, and you can hear this going on. You can hear his screaming and yelling. You can't simply, deny that you had no knowledge of this. And the telling thing is when one of the other cellmates hauled him over to the guard's desk, they didn't give him medical treatment for hours after that. That just shows they'd had the word that he's to be taken down. And so this is just totally inexcusable. I'm not hearing anybody in the media reporting this, let alone demanding an investigation of why the guards didn't go to his... there's cameras over everything in those prisons.
Well, it's sort of like James McDougal, who had turned state's evidence, was going to testify against Bill Clinton, and we know what happened to James McDougal. He ended up very, very dead. Instead of giving him protection, getting him out of jail and giving him protection, they left him there where he died.
That's correct. So, as I said before, the U.S. drug-riddled prison system is operated by the dark side of government itself. A lot of people don't realize that, but that's the only reason you can have the kind of drugs that go through those things is when criminals are part of the guard system and the wardens and things look the other way. Guards are mostly corrupt and will never protect prisoners who the government wants taken down. Prisoners who are hostile to government for ideological reasons, who are otherwise whistleblowers, are specifically targeted for, quote, special treatment, and they can expect to be assaulted, raped, or even killed, and the guards won't intervene, and that's exactly what happened to Ramos. So it's really sad to see what is happening on these things to our Border Patrol agents. But
of course, it happens because the good people are not involved. They think as long as it doesn't bother them, and as long as we can still have, football and all the luxuries, that everything's all right. But it isn't all right. And when the evil people are in control, then no man's life or property or family are safe.
That's true. Next topic is that Hugo Chavez has finally admitted that he's a communist. Now, I know there's no surprise to my readers, for I've openly referred to Venezuela's dictator as a communist all along. But now it's out in the open on January 13th. Chavez was quoted giving a lecture to the Catholic bishops saying that they should read Marx, Lenin, and the Bible. Christ, he said, was an authentic communist, an anti-imperialist, an enemy of the oligarchy. Chavez added in the same speech that he himself had become a communist since at least 2002. Actually, his communist connections go back a lot further than that, clear back to the 1990s when he had his coup against the government and when he was put into prison. But the bigger story really is not so much that he declared himself a communist, it's just that that's politically incorrect for anyone to call anyone a communist now. You have to put it in quotes or call him a Marxist or call him a leftist. The press is always wanting to downplay those that are on the radical left, and they always want to upplay anyone on the right as a right-wing extremist. But Mary Anastasia O'Grady, one of the top Latin American commentators, tells it bluntly. She said, Venezuela's Congress didn't sing the Communist International now last week when it granted President Hugo Chavez the power to rule by decree in a ceremony in Caracas' historic Plaza Bolívar. But it did pledge unwavering allegiance to a socialist revolution that rivals the Paris Commune. It was the moment Venezuelans had long been dreading for years, the official installation of a dictatorship in Venezuela. Mr. Chavez had asked Congress for the mother of all revolutionary law, or the power to rule by decree, because he said it's necessary to draw up the mother of all revolutionary laws, especially in the area of economics, where he wants to nationalize the electricity system, the privately held oil operations in the Orinoco Belt, and the country's largest telephone company known as CANTV. This is shades, of course, of Cuba of the 1960s, and if things go according to plan, she says, it won't be long before Caracas will start to look like Havana, a decrepit, broken-down city that never progresses. She said, and she's got a very acerbic tongue, she said, Venezuelans have been watching their democracy slowly suffocate for 7 years now. The militarized government has methodically gobbled up institutional independence. It has bribed where it couldn't bully, and it has sowed hateful class envy. The typical Marxist tactics. he continues, each valiant effort by Democrats to hold ground and salvage civility sapped by a shrinking supply of fortitude. And she said, you know, you can't compare Chavez to the 20th century dictatorships of Hitler and others, and Mussolini. Otherwise, you'll overstate the Venezuelan dictator's managerial skills. She said, at least Mussolini and Hitler made the trains run on time. Mr. Chavez, on the other hand, seems possessed to reverse the Midas touch. Under his leadership, the country has soaring murder rates, double-digit inflation, food shortages, oil field depletion, and a massive brain drain. What's worse, it's reaching a deficit crisis because Chavez is spending so much of his oil money overseas, buying weapons, that there's nothing left over for the poor and his promises to save them in Venezuela.
Well, that's why everybody has to have that, be able to rule by decree, so that when the people turn against him, it really won't matter. He is in control, and he will continue to use his dictatorial powers.
Well, we have our own dictator here in the States now. It's Governor Rick Perry of Texas, you know, following the line of the phony Republican governors that included George W. Bush. He signed, as you know, an executive order mandating that most girls, or all girls in public schools starting in September 2008, must receive the vaccine against human papillomavirus, which HPV is a sexually transmitted disease. I mean, what an insult for all of the Texas girls who aren't involved in sexually transmitted diseases to be forced to take an untested vaccine because they're simply going to public schools.
Well, actually, of course, are there any exemptions? We have been reading on the web that they can, of course, invoke a personal or religious exemption. They're just not telling the people. It's not an opt-in program. In other words, you can have it if you want to, but we're going to force it on you, unless, of course, you object too loudly.
Well, there's been a national outcry against this, and the governor has defiantly said that he would not change the policy. Whenever a politician does that, it symbols to me that there usually is a national agenda afoot. And I think the national agenda is to get people used to taking the government mandate, letting the government mandate vaccines. In fact, there is no law that requires all children to be vaccinated yet. There could be, and I think this is preparatory to it. But when parents put their children in public schools, they lose certain rights. The public schools do have the right to exclude anyone who hasn't been vaccinated, because government schools are not run by the public. They are not public schools. They're government schools. And so he can rule by decree as far as that's concerned. Yes, there will be some exemptions for opting out for religious reasons, but it's getting harder and harder for people to do that, especially when government nurses start vaccinating people without the parents' permission.
Well, I think that we need to really get people educated as far as the very real dangers of vaccines. They tell us that they're safe and effective, and they're certainly not safe. The number of complications, even with Gardasil, have been considerable already, and they just started using it. So I think we should all be very concerned. But what else is there in those vaccines that might have a disastrous effect on literally millions of our young women?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. Of course, I'm very concerned that the public needs to wake up to even the greater threat than vaccines, and that's the danger of putting your kids in the public schools in the first place.
Amen to that.
You cannot lose. I mean, one of the Texas legislators said he was complaining about the government acting too fast and saying the parents should have a say in this. What do you mean the parents should have a say? The parents should have the only say. Government should have no say in a matter of vaccinating the youth. So, you know, this is one of those special interest or the state interest doctrine here, a legal doctrine that says that the government has a state interest in the welfare and health of children. Well, my retort to that is I don't care who has an interest in my children's health and safety and welfare. I want to know who has the ultimate legal interest. And if I don't have the ultimate legal interest, then I have no ability to stop the government who's claiming their state interest. And that's the way the courts have ruled. They give the government the ultimate interest in a child's education, even though they call it simply a benign state interest.
Well, I think the most frightening thing about this is the Merck Company, which manufactures the vaccine, has literally billions of dollars of liability because they lied to the people and they've killed between 60 and 100,000 people from either heart attack or stroke, and that was with the Vioxx. And so they have to make that money up or Merck is going to disappear. They're trying and they're putting pressure and they're passing out money to politicians all across America to make this mandatory. They're human papilloma, a vaccine, and there is no evidence long-term, no long-term studies with this at all. What's is going to happen 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line? We don't know. It's they're experimenting on the children, the females of this country, and I think every person should be concerned about that, don't you?
Yes, sir. We have to remember, too, that Governor Perry has links to Merck, and so does his former chief of staff, Mike Toomey, who's now a lobbyist for Merck.
Isn't that interesting? Well, we'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Joel, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
The last topic I'd like to discuss is the coming global warming dictatorship. Republican Senator John McCain said it all, quote, "The global warming debate is over." He was echoing the growing establishment media policy that no more debate on global warming will be tolerated. The UN has said this is caused only by human factors, and therefore that's the end. And so anyone who disagrees will be derided. Oregon State climatologist is being removed from his position because he does not go along with the fact that global warming is caused by humans, or at least that it's detectable in any form whatsoever. In fact, even some of the scientists who were involved in the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change came out and said that, in fact, the panel's fourth assessment report distorts the actual scientific findings and the discrepancies were driven by a political agenda.
And a lot of them were added after the scientists had gone home after the panel had disbanded.
That's just right. Simply
rewrote it. They're lying.
They said that, in fact, the ones who wrote the 20-page-long summary were political appointees and not the scientists themselves. And now that the summary statement has been written, they are going to change the report so that it matches summary statements rather than change the summary to match the scientific evidence. Now, this has been going on all along. These are simply climatological models which you can distort however you set upon the assumptions that you're going to feed into the computer. Two major books that have come out now, one, Unstoppable Global Warming, Every 1500 Years by physicist Fred Singer, and the other one, Two Chilling Stars, A New Theory for Climate Change, which talks about, both of them talk about the fact that the sun is by far the dominant force and that these global warming trends happen every few centuries or so and that they're unstoppable and they will go up and down. There's no way when it's changing this rapidly by changes in the solar radiation that you could determine how much is attributable to human factors, which is very small.
Well, people don't understand that of the greenhouse gases, CO2 doesn't make more than 2 or 3% of it. Most of it's moisture or other gases.
Yes.
The thing is, it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is. They say it over and over again, and so many people honestly believe it. This shows how well they control the medium and how well they control what we think. Our guest has been Joel Skousen of World Affairs Brief. And as always, it's a pleasure having you with us, Joel. We'll look forward to having you with us again later.
Yes, tomorrow morning, Dr.
Stevens. Amen. Bye-bye. God bless. And thanks very much for being with us. And once again, Joel Skousen, World Affairs Brief. Hope you enjoyed the program. And we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and during the break, right, Joel Skousen was talking about global warming. It's a fraud. How do we know it's a fraud? Well, because the polar ice caps are melting. The polar ice caps are melting on Mars. Does that have anything to do, of course, with what's going on here in America? And the other thing is why do they call Greenland green? Because 1,000 years ago, why Greenland was green, and they grew grapes there, and then we went into a period of global cooling. And we're going to have next week, I believe, Dr. Arthur Robinson, who has actually sent out petitions, and over 17,000 scientists signed this, saying that there's no evidence that human activity has anything to do with global warming. But you see, this whole idea of global warming really has to do with an attack on America. It will destroy the infrastructure of the United States. It will cause us to cut back dramatically on our use of any sort of fossil fuel or gasoline or oil. And it will not affect China, the largest polluter of the world. It will not affect India, the second largest polluter in the world. It is only an attack on the United States being launched by people here in the United States who hate America. And when you understand that, you begin to understand what's going on. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get our 4-tape set on sustainable development and our sustainable development syllabus. You need to get our global warming of 4-tape set. You need to get the information that's available from Radio Liberty that we have that will explain to you one of the greatest scams ever perpetrated on an intelligent people or a formerly intelligent people. Because they've intentionally dumbed us down. They're putting poison in the water. They're poisoning our children. Today, the CDC announced there's an increased incidence of autism. Actually, it's now 1 in every 150 children. It used to be 1 in 10,000. Now it's 1 in 150. But the government has no idea why it's happening. Of course, they know why it's happening. It's the mercury that they've been putting in the vaccines. It's the fluoride that they put in the water. And, of course, if you fluoridate the water using hydrofluoric salicylic acid, you increase the level of blood, pardon me, of lead in the blood of the children and blood. There's no safe level, and it creates all sorts of brain changes. Today they're giving mercury to thimerosal to children who are 6 months of age. We couldn't put it on the skin because it's too toxic. Same exact thing we're putting into their arms. We're giving it to pregnant women in the first trimester. We're going to do the maximum danger to the child in the womb. If you want to get the information, we have 4-tape sets on mercury. We have several excellent DVDs on mercury. We have a book, Evidence of Harm on Mercury. Understand they're poisoning our children. If you want to get into fluoride and see the scientific studies, and we publish them with the permission of the Journal of Fluoride, why, my talk on the hidden agenda and the syllabus that goes with that and the documentation, you need to get this information, ladies and gentlemen. Who would want it to harm children? Evil and wicked people, and there really are evil and wicked people. Read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Get the book we're carrying now, Satanic Crimes. Get the book, Hostage to the Devil, and the 4-tape set that goes with that, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. Get the DVD on Rape of the Soul and what they're doing to our children. Certainly get the DVD and or video, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And then, of course, the video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. Get the DVD, The Da Vinci Con, which goes into Gnosticism, and the messages you're getting from your films, your Hollywood films, and you don't even know what's going on because nobody's telling you. And unless you understand the secrets, why, you can have no idea what's really transpiring in America today. There really are secret societies. There are satanic organizations. There are people who worship Lucifer, and some of them are working at the highest levels of our society, and they belong to secret societies. And when they're asked about those secret societies, they say, oh, we're so secret, we can't discuss them. And that was what President Bush and John Kerry, both presidential candidates, said in the year 2004 when the two members of Skull and Bones were running for the presidency of the United States. Well, Dr. Stan, pray for America. Pray for revival. Our number 1-800-544-8927.